Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Vittale Sayam Ipakadamayam Tadati Sapandantikam. Vansikapatu Bhischa Kripasantave Vicha Pititaram Pabinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. So we're hearing about Dhruva Maharaj and how he's taken a great journey into the forest, and by the grace of Krishna he's met Narada Muni, who's instructed him very carefully to first he tested him to see if he had the required determination for success, and then he instructed him to go to Vrindavan, go to Brajabhumi, go to the Yamuna River, and thereby purify yourself by bathing in the Yamuna. Perform a Stanga Yoga for the purpose of meditating upon the Lord. Then chant the mantra. Oh, now we're actually up to that part. Or after performing a Stanga Yoga, meditate on the Lord, and we heard about the beauty of the Lord and what he should meditate upon. Because ultimately, meditation means meditation upon Krishna. This is the highest form of meditation. And one whose mind is habituated to meditate upon Krishna, he is no longer attracted to those things produced of the material world, because those things produced of the material world are a shadow. And how could we be satisfied with the shadow of something? Maybe this is too loud a little bit. How could we be satisfied with the shadow when naturally we need substance? We want the reality of the subject, not the shadow. So the material world is ultimately a shadow reflection, upside down and backwards reflection of that which exists in the spiritual world. So if somehow or another we don't see the spiritual world, then the shadow looks so real, the material world seems so wonderful. But lo and behold, every time we try to grasp it and get the pleasure that appears to be there, it just goes right through our hands. It doesn't exist. So Dhruva is requested by Narada Muni, his spiritual master, to focus his consciousness upon the beauty of the Lord. And one who becomes attracted to the beautiful form of Krishna never again becomes attracted to the dull, shadowy forms in the material world. So we're up to text 52. We completed that, where Narada says, one who meditates in this way on the Lord, concentrating his mind on the always auspicious form of the Lord. What does it mean when a form is always auspicious? It means that it's wonderful. It's always auspicious. It's always very, very uplifting, elevating. If we can just do that. And one who does that is very soon freed from all material contamination, and he does not come down from meditation upon the Lord. Prabhupada explains in his purport, a very short purport, about deity worship and what its purpose is. And he explains that the Pancharatra system of devotional service for worshipping the deity in the temple, it makes the devotee think constantly of the Lord. That is samadhi or trance. One who practices in this way cannot deviate from the service of the Lord, and that makes him perfect in the mission of human life. So this constant meditation and thinking about Krishna is the perfection of Krishna consciousness. And to bring us to that stage, the process of deity worship exists. Now he's going to continue to the mantra that should be constantly chanted as one is worshipping. So first, so in because it's not only that one meditates, but one chants as well. So they're very complete instructions, and with all the instructions, Prabhupada gives the essence, because they're told to Dhruva Maharaj, who is a very special young devotee. And we can't do what Dhruva Maharaj does. It's not possible for us to do what Dhruva Maharaj does, and we'll hear what he does. But Prabhupada gives the practical essence of those instructions in a way that's applicable for all of us. So, O son of the king, who is that? Narada is speaking to Dhruva. Now I shall speak unto you the mantra which is to be chanted with this process of meditation. I wonder if they have squeak-proof bags. Why don't you just format it? Do it all at once. There you go. I shall speak unto you the mantra which is to be chanted with this process of meditation, Narada Muni says. One who carefully chants this mantra for 7 nights can see the perfect human beings flying in the sky, the residents of Siddhaloka. So we'll read some of Prabhupada's purport. And in what we're going to do today, Prabhupada's purports in this section are very, very nice. There's many, many wonderful ones where he speaks very deeply and personally and practically and powerfully from his experience. So we'll read quite a few of them. Narada Muni uses the word japa, which indicates that the mantra is to be chanted is very confidential, very secret. One may ask, if it is confidential, why is it mentioned in the writing of Srimad Bhagavatam? It is confidential in this sense. One may receive a published mantra anywhere, but unless it is accepted through the chain of disciplic succession, the mantra does not act. It is said by authoritative sources that any mantra chanted without having been received from the disciplic succession has no efficacy. Another point established in this verse is that meditation should be carried on with the chanting of a mantra. Chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is the easiest process of meditation in this age. As soon as one chants the Hare Krishna mantra, he sees the form of Krishna, Rama, and their energies. And that is the perfect stage of trance. So as soon as one chants, one sees the form of the Lord, because abhina tam namanamano, there is no difference between the Lord and his name, abhina, non-different. So that means that if one chants the mantra, one will actually experience the form of the Lord. And if one is not experiencing the form of the Lord, that means that one is truly not truly chanting the mantra properly. And this is achieved when the chanting is pure. And this the non-duality of the name and the mantra, or the mantra and Krishna's name and Krishna's mantra, Krishna's form of Krishna's mantra, that is the stage of bhava bhakti, actually. So one should not artificially try to see the form of the Lord while chanting Hare Krishna. But when the chanting is performed offenselessly, the Lord will automatically reveal himself to the view of the chanter. The chanter, therefore, has to concentrate on hearing the vibration, and without extra endeavor on his part, the Lord will automatically appear. The Lord automatically appears when he is pleased with the devotee who is chanting offenselessly, which means he who has a proper service attitude towards the holy name, as a servant of Namo Prabhu. And Krishna manifests himself to such a pure chanter. So now Narada Muni is going to say the mantra. He's already intrigued us that if you chant this properly, for 7 nights you will see perfect human beings flying in the sky. One will even see more than that. One will see Krishna. And the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. This is the 12 syllable mantra for worshipping Lord Krishna. One should install the physical forms of the Lord. So now he's going on. You meditate on the Lord, you chant the mantra, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. And actually when we chant this mantra, it is so powerful that one can feel the auspiciousness in any situation increase. And therefore, when in the morning Bhagavatam classes, what mantra do we chant before we chant the Bhagavatam sloka?
Om Namo Bhagavate.
Yes. And immediately, the auspiciousness increases, perceptively, clearly perceptively. So one should chant the mantra, and then also, here's another instruction. One should install the physical forms of the Lord. So meditate, chant the mantra, and see the form of the Lord. And with the chanting of the mantra, one should offer fruits and flowers and other varieties of foodstuff, exactly according to the rules and regulations prescribed by authorities. So meditate on the Lord, chant the mantra, worship the form of the Lord, and serve the form of the Lord, because ultimately we're trying to recultivate, reawaken, have blossom our serving spirit to Krishna, because we want to break that false ego, that false center of our existence wherein we imagine ourselves the center. So we want to develop the serving mood to Krishna. So one has to worship exactly according to the rules and regulations prescribed by authorities. But this should be done in consideration of time, of place, time, and attendant conveniences and inconveniences. So one needs to know how to adopt the proper way of worship according to the time and place and circumstances. Now here there's a purport here of Prabhupada that's quite long, but very important. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya is known as Dvadasakshara Mantra. This mantra, which basically means just the 12 syllables, this mantra is chanted by Vaishnava devotees, and it begins with pranav, or omkar, om namo, om. There is an injunction that those who are not brahmanas cannot pronounce the pranava mantra. But Dhruva Maharaj was born a kshatriya. He had once admitted before Narada Muni that a kshatriya, he was unable to accept Narada's instruction of renunciation and mental equilibrium, which are the concern of a brahmana. Still, although not a brahmana, but a kshatriya, warrior, not an intellectual priest, but a warrior, Dhruva was allowed, on the authority of Narada, to pronounce, to speak, to intone the pranava omkar. This is very significant, especially in India. Now, this may seem quaint to us who have been brought up in the West, but in India, these type of things are very, very strong. Very, very strong. This is the culture. In India, the caste brahmanas, the priests who are born in brahmana families, object greatly when persons from other castes, other families, who are not born in brahmana families, recite this pranava mantra. But here is the tacit proof that if a person accepts the Vaishnava mantra or Vaishnava way of worshipping the deity, he is allowed to chant the pranava mantra. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord personally accepts that anyone, even one of a low species, can be elevated to the highest position and go back to home, back to Godhead, simply if he worships properly. The prescribed rules, as stated here by Narada Muni, are that one should accept the mantra through a bona fide spiritual master and hear the mantra in the right ear. Not only should one chant or murmur the mantra, but in front of him he must have the deity or physical form of the Lord. Of course, when the Lord appears, it is no longer a physical form. For example, when an iron rod is made red hot in a fire, it is no longer iron, it is fire. Similarly, when we make a form of the Lord, whether of wood or stone or metal or jewels or paint or even a form within the mind, it is a bona fide, spiritual, transcendental form of the Lord. Not only Must one receive the mantra from the bona fide spiritual master like Narada Muni or his representative in the disciplic succession? But one must chant the mantra. And not only must one chant, but he should also offer whatever foodstuff is available in his part of the world according to time and convenience. So these examples are very important because they give authority for the Hare Krishna movement, or the movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to spread all over the world, and giving those not born in Brahmana families, reforming them, allow them to become purified by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and worshipping the deity. And these things are very controversial in India. And one day the controversies, they will reach the West, I'm sure. But very controversial. But they're required. And here's the scriptural proofs. And in so many places in Prabhupada's books, the scriptural proofs are mentioned. But here's one of them. That here, Dhruva Maharaj was given the mantra, even though he was not born in a Brahmin family. And he was told to worship the deity, although he is not born in a Brahmin family. The method of worship, chanting the mantra and preparing the forms of the Lord, is not stereotyped, nor is it exactly the same everywhere. So adjustments have to be made according to the place in which it's being done. It is specifically mentioned in this verse that one should take consideration of the time, place, and available conveniences. Our Krishna consciousness movement is going on throughout the entire world, and we also install deities in different centers. Sometimes our Indian friends, puffed up with concocted notions, criticize, "This has not been done, this, that has not been done." So, this, that, you know, this one rule and regulation or that rule and regulation, seeing the imperfection, but not seeing the glory of what's being done. So sometimes people will criticize in that way. But they forget this instruction of one of the greatest Vaishnavas, of Narada Muni to one of the greatest Vaishnavas, Dhruva Maharaj. One has to consider the particular time, country, and conveniences. What is convenient in India may not be convenient in the Western countries. Those who are not actually in the line of acharyas, or who personally have no knowledge of how to act in the role of acharya or teacher, they unnecessarily criticize the activities of the ISKCON movement in countries outside of India. The fact is that such critics cannot do anything personally to spread Krishna consciousness. If someone does go and preach, taking all risks and allowing all considerations for time and place, it might be that there are changes in the manner of worship, but that is not at all faulty according to Shastra. Srimad Varagavacharya, an acharya, a teacher in the disciplic succession of the Ramanuja Sampradaya, has remarked in his commentary that chandalas, or conditioned souls who are born in lower than worker sudra families, can also be initiated according to circumstances. The formalities may be slightly changed here and there to make them Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends that his name should be heard in every nook and corner of the world. How is this possible unless one preaches everywhere? The cult of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Bhagavata Dharma, and he especially recommends Krishna Katha, or the cult of Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. He recommends that every Indian considering this task to be para upakar, or welfare activities, take the Lord's message to other residents of the world. Other residents of the world does not refer only to those who are exactly like the Indian Brahmanas and Kshatriyas, or like caste Brahmanas who claim to be Brahmanas because they were born in the family of Brahmanas. The principle that only Indians and Hindus should be brought into the Vaishnava cult is a mistaken idea. There should be propaganda to bring everyone to the Vaishnava cult. The Krishna consciousness movement is meant for this purpose. There is no bar to propagating the Krishna consciousness movement even amongst people who are born in Chandal, Mlecho, or Yavana families. Even in India, this point has been enunciated by Srila Sanatana Goswami in his book, Hari Bhakti Vilas. So Prabhupada is quoting many different teachers to strongly make this point. Bhargavacharya, who is a famous commentator in the Ramanuja Sampradaya, commentated on Srimad Bhagavatam. He's quoting Narada Muni's words to Dhruva Maharaj, and he's quoting now Sanatan Goswami and Hari Bhakti Vilas, which is Smriti, and is the authorized Vedic guide for Vaishnavas in their daily behavior. Sanatana Goswami says that his bell metal can be turned to gold when mixed with mercury in a chemical process. So by the bona fide diksha or initiation method, anyone can become a Vaishnava. One should take initiation from a bona fide spiritual master coming in the disciplic succession, who is authorized by his predecessor spiritual master. This is called Diksha Vidhan. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Vyapashitya, one should accept the spiritual master. By this process, the entire world can be converted to Krishna consciousness. And Prabhupada practically showed the example. It was a great struggle. Now, in the Krishna consciousness movement, we take it all for granted. But what Prabhupada had to struggle through was incredible. In fact, it was more than incredible, it was impossible. There was no money, we can't even imagine. There was no money, people had never seen anyone walking around with a shaved head and a sikha. Now, by just doing it, as Prabhupada said, it became a fad. No one had ever seen someone walk around in robes, and we used to get, just by walking the street, people would become angry, yell at us, things like that. No money. Young people taking big responsibilities far above their own maturity, making mistakes, but somehow or another in Prabhupada's order pushing on. So, gradually maturity enters as people become more purified and grow older and more experienced. And gradually, or quickly if someone chants fully sincerely, but gradually the purification acts very deeply within the consciousness. So those who say this is wrong and this is wrong and this is pointing to some shastric detail are missing the essence. The essence is that if one takes shelter of Krishna under proper guidance, having taken initiation from a bona fide spiritual master, then he will come to the platform. In other places, Prabhupada explains the Pancharatriki system as different from the Vaidic Brahman system. That no one can follow. No one can follow the Vedic Brahmana system in this age of Kali. But the idea in the Pancharatriki system is that if someone has a spark of interest, just a spark, to somehow fan that spark so it blazes in Krishna consciousness, and then the blaze of Krishna consciousness will purify the heart of that person. It will make him pure, pure Vaishnava, pure devotee, and then naturally the brahminical qualities develop. Yasyasta bhakti bhagavata kinchana. So by this process of taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and following the instructions that he gives, which are none different from the instructions as he's heard, adopted according to time and place, according to the realization, and that can and will purify someone if they adopt it. And by that process, the entire world can be Krishna conscious, not by taking something from India and trying to implant it directly upon the Western culture where it can't be planted directly. I think either somewhere else or Prabhupada gave the example that when you order, I think Prabhupada will mention it later. Balacho. That you, when you worship the deity, you should worship with Ganges water. So how can we do that here? All we have is swan water. What can we do? So that means we can't worship the deity? No. That has to be adjusted. So many things have to be adjusted. But it can't be adjusted whimsically, and people don't know the principle cannot do the adjusting. Otherwise they'll adjust the essence right out of it, and it will lose its efficacy. But yet adjustments have to be made according to time, place, and circumstances. So Narada continues instructing Dhruva how to worship. So chant the mantra, meditate, chant the mantra, make the form of the deity, and worship the deity. One should worship the Lord, this is text 55, by offering pure water, probably in this purport. Yes. Pure flower garlands, fruits, flowers, and vegetables. Suchibi. Being purified. Everything should be purified means clean, basically. Pure flower garlands. This is how to worship the Lord. Fruits, flowers, and vegetables, which are available in the forest. Or by collecting newly grown grasses, small buds of flowers, or even the skins of trees. And if possible, by offering tulsi leaves, which are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's giving detailed instructions. Prabhupada's purport. It is specifically mentioned herein that tulsi leaves are very dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And devotees should take particular care to have tulsi leaves in every temple and center of worship. Now, raise your hand if you've never seen a tulsi plant. Yeah, you've never seen one? Okay. Tomorrow. Is there anyone here? No. They're all in the backyard now. This tulsi. Raise your hand if you've seen so many tulsi plants. So many. Yeah. Now, 25 years ago, or maybe not 25, but 30 years ago, in the West, there were no tulsi plants. There were no tulsi plants out of India, maybe in Fiji. In Fiji there were tulsi plants in this place, or Mauritius, or a few places there were tulsi plants. But in most of the Western countries, there were no tulsi plants anywhere. Anywhere. But yet tulsi is so necessary for worship because Krishna is pleased by it, and worship ultimately means to please Krishna. So tulsi plants were necessary. So Prabhupada explains, he wants that, and then he explains, in the Western countries, while engaging in propagating the Krishna consciousness movement, we were brought great unhappiness because we could not find tulsi leaves. We are very much obliged, therefore, to our disciple Srimati Govindadasi, because she had taken so much care to grow tulsi plants from seeds, and she has become successful by the grace of Krishna. Now tulsi plants are growing in almost every center of our movement. So, just prior to the time Prabhupada wrote this, Govindadasi was in Hawaii at that time, and she got somehow or another, she got some tulsi plants and some seeds, and she grew them, and they grew so luxuriantly in Hawaii, like, so huge. And then she started sending the seeds all over the world, and by that first arrangement tulsi began to grow all over. So very important to offer tulsi to Krishna again. Why? Because Krishna likes it. So Krishna says patram pushpam. So patram means one leaf. You should, at least one leaf, not even at least, but just one leaf is sufficient to please Krishna if it is offered with devotion. One time I saw one devotee who was taking care of tulsi plants in Melbourne many years ago, asked Prabhupada how many leaves we should offer. And you know how when you do a service, there's a tendency to think that that service is the only important service in the universe, and everyone else is in Maya because they're not doing that service. And everyone should recognize that this service is the important service after all. Krishna wants tulsi leaves. So therefore, if you're not offering Krishna tulsi leaves all day long, well, you're useless. So this devotee asked Prabhupada how many tulsi leaves we should offer Krishna on the plate. And Prabhupada looked at him and said, one. Of course, we can offer much more than one, but he was putting things in perspective of the fellow's ego, false ego. Maybe I can open the window just a little bit, if it's too cold, just a little bit. Tulsi leaves are very important in the method of worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So why are they important? Because Krishna likes them. And again, worship and bhakti means to act in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. In this verse, the word salilai means by the water. Of course, Dhruva Maharaj was worshipping on the bank of the Jamuna. The Jamuna and the Ganges are sacred. And sometimes devotees in India insist that the deity must be worshipped with water of the Ganges or Jamuna. But here we understand Deshakala to mean according to time and country. In the Western countries, there is no river Jamuna or Ganges water from such, or Ganges. Water from such sacred rivers is not available. Does this mean that the archer worship should for that reason be stopped? And no one can get purified and no one can see the deity because we don't have Ganges water? No. Shalili Lai refers to any water, whatever is available. But it must be very clear and collected purely. That water can be used. The other paraphernalia, such as flower garlands, fruits and vegetables, should be collected according to the country and according to their availability. Tulsi leaves are very important for satisfying the Lord. So as far as possible, an arrangement should be made for growing tulsi leaves. Dhruva Maharaj was advised to worship the Lord with the fruits and flowers available in the forest. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna frankly says that he accepts vegetables, fruits, flowers, etc. One should not offer Lord Vasudeva anything other than what is prescribed herein by the great authority Narada Muni. One cannot offer to the deity according to one's whims. Since these fruits and vegetables are available anywhere in the universe, we should observe this small point very attentively. So nice. Purports. So nice. Narada continues. It is possible to worship the form of the Lord made of physical elements, such as earth, water, pulp, wood, and metal. So the form can be made from these ingredients. In the forest, one can make a form with no more than earth and water and worship him according to the above principles. A devotee who has full control over his self should be very sober and peaceful and must be satisfied simply with eating whatever fruits and vegetables are available in the forest. Here's another instruction from Prabhupada. It is essential for a devotee to worship the form of the Lord and not only meditate upon the form of the Lord within his mind with the chanting of the mantra given by the spiritual master. The worship of the form must be present. Therefore, the initiation process must go on so that people can learn to worship the deity. The impersonalists take unnecessary trouble to meditate upon or worship something impersonal, and the path is very precarious. We are not advised to follow the impersonalist way of meditating or on worshipping the Lord. Dhruva Maharaj was advised to worship a form made of earth and water because in the jungle it is not possible to have a form made of metal, wood or stone. The best process is to take earth mixed with water and make a form of the Lord and worship Him. The devotee should not be anxious about cooking food. Whatever is available in the forest or in the city amongst the fruits and vegetable groups should be offered to the deity, and the devotee should be satisfied eating that. He should not be anxious to have very palatable dishes. Of course, wherever it is possible, one should offer the deities the best foodstuffs, prepared within the category of fruits and vegetables, cooked or uncooked. The important factor is that the devotee should be regulated. That is one of the good qualifications of a devotee. He should not hanker to satisfy the tongue with a particular type of foodstuff. He should be satisfied to eat whatever prasad is available by the grace of the Lord. It's all important. To take prasadam, anuprasadam. To take what is Krishna gives us and feel very happy with that. That means one has to control one's tongue and one's mind. My dear Dhruva, beside worshipping the deity and chanting the mantra three times a day, you should meditate upon the transcendental activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in its different incarnations, as exhibited by His supreme will and personal potencies. So all the Lord's forms and His incarnations are transcendental, and all their activities are transcendental. The Mayavadis, the impersonalists, say that the Lord's activities are touched by Maya. Then, if that was the case, why would Narada Muni be telling Dhruva Maharaj to meditate upon them? No, the Lord's form and activities are transcendental. Dibhyam. Janma karma cha me dibhyam evam yogati tatvata. And just by knowing that in truth, one can become liberated and go to Krishna. And Prabhupada explains in the last paragraph, short paragraph in this purport, Narada advises Dhruva, now listen to this carefully, to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord, which is as good as the meditation of concentrating one's mind on the form of the Lord. As meditation on any form of the Lord is valuable, so is chanting of different names of the Lord, such as Hari Govinda and Narayan. But in this age, we are especially advised to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as enunciated in the Shastras. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And we should chant a lot. And we should chant more than a lot. Ultimately, we should chant continuously. And we should not let our mind, we should fix our mind clearly on Krishna's names continuously. That's perfection. So Narada continues. One should follow in the footsteps of previous devotees regarding how to worship the Supreme Lord within the prescribed paraphernalia, or one should offer worship within the heart by reciting the mantra to the Personality of Godhead, who is none different from the mantra. So I'll read the purport, because Prabhupada explains how all this, even if we have nothing, if we have nothing, and we don't have much in the way of ability or facilities, there's nothing material, external, because sometimes we think, oh, I don't have this, I can't serve, I don't have that, I can't serve. But Prabhupada explains in the purport that we can do all this even in our mind, all of it in the mind, if we have no other recourse. It is recommended here, here's Prabhupada's purport, that even if one cannot arrange to worship the forms of the Lord with all recommended paraphernalia, one can simply think about the form of the Lord and mentally offer everything recommended in the Shastras, including flowers, chandan, pulp, conch shell, umbrella, fan, and chamara. One can meditate upon offering and chant the 12-syllable mantra Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Since the mantra and the Supreme Personality of Godhead are none different, one can worship the form of the Lord with the mantra in the absence of physical paraphernalia. The story of the Brahmana who worshipped the Lord within his mind, as related in Bhaktivinoda Sindhu or the Nectar of Devotion, should be consulted in this connection. There was a poor Brahmana who he was offering. He couldn't do anything, practically speaking. So mentally, he would do everything. He would gather water and golden jeweled pots from all the holy rivers and all over the world and offer them to the deity in his mind. He would just be sitting. and he would cook wonderful sweet rice and offer it to the Lord, and so many very tasty foods. And then one day, he was cooking sweet rice in his mind for the Lord, and he wanted, because sweet rice, sometimes it's taken hot, warm, but sometimes it's taken cool, and the colder the better. So he had cooked it in his mind, and in his mind he wanted to see if it was too hot to offer. He wanted it to be cool, so in his mind he touched it. And then he was shocked, and his meditation broke because his finger became burnt by touching it. And then, so actually Krishna, he had been doing that for many years, and Krishna was playing a trick on him. That's actually what it was. And Krishna and the spiritual world smiled. And Lakshmi Devi was with him. And she said, "Why are you smiling?" And that was why. And then he said, "I'll show you." He actually took the Brahmana to the spiritual world, because he was devotedly, so devotedly, with devotion, making these offerings. So it doesn't make a difference where one is and what one has. If one has devotion, desire to please Krishna, and on the other side, if one has no devotion, it doesn't make a difference what one has. One still won't do it properly. So devotion is really everything. And if where there is a will, there is a way. So if we have the will, we will have the way by Krishna's grace. So such, if the paraphernalia is not physical, present physically, one can think of the items and offer them to the deity by chanting the mantra. Such are the liberal and potent facilities in the process of devotional service. So continuing, text 59 and 60, and then we'll read just up to 61. Anyone who thus engages in the devotional service of the Lord, so he's completing now, Narada's completing his instructions to Dhruva. Anyone who thus engages in the devotional service of the Lord seriously and sincerely, within his mind, with his mind, words, and body, and who is fixed in the activities of the prescribed devotional methods, is blessed by the Lord according to his desire. According to our desire, Krishna reciprocates. If a devotee desires material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, or liberation from the material world, he's awarded these results. So Krishna reciprocates according to what we want from him. Yayatamam prapadyante. 61. If one is very serious about liberation, so whatever we want, Krishna will give us if we worship him with devotion. But if we want to get out of the material world, if we're serious about liberation, such a person must stick to the process of transcendental loving service, engaging 24 hours a day in the highest stage of ecstasy, and he must certainly be aloof from all activities of sense gratification. So we'll read the second paragraph here. Dhruva Maharaj is advised that if he has no desire for sense gratification, then he should directly engage himself in the transcendental loving service of the Lord. The path of apavarga, or liberation, begins from the stage called moksha. In this verse, the word vimuktaye, for liberation, is especially mentioned. If one wants to be happy within this material world, he may aspire to go to the different material planetary systems where there is a higher standard of sense gratification. But real moksha, or liberation, is performed without any such desire. This is explained in the Bhaktivinoda Sindhu by the term anya vilasita sanyam, without desire for material sense gratification. For persons who are still inclined to enjoy material life in different stages or on different planets, the stage of liberation in bhakti yoga is not recommended. Only persons who are completely free from the contamination of sense gratification can execute bhakti yoga, or the process of devotional service, very purely. The activities on the path of apavarga, liberation, up to the stage of dharma, art, and kama, are meant for sense gratification. But when one comes to the stage of moksha, the impersonal liberation, the practitioner wants to merge into the existence of the Supreme. But this is also sense gratification. When one goes above the stage of liberation, however, he at once becomes one of the associates to render associates of the Lord to render transcendental loving service. That is technically called vimukti. For this special vimukti liberation, vimukti means a special type of mukti. Narada Muni recommends that one directly engage himself in devotional service with no anyabhilasita sunyam jnanakamarana vritta, with no selfish desires. So one can get, Krishna is a desire tree, in that whatever you want from Krishna, he will give you. But devotional service can give the greatest of all results. Pure devotional service with no desire for anything can give the greatest of results, which means to go to Krishna Loka and be with Krishna forever. So that type of devotional service is ultimately recommended. But Narada is telling Dhruva, who just said he wants a kingdom. So he's saying, you worship the Lord and you'll get that. You'll get your kingdom. But actually, Krishna will give him so much more than that as well. Sometimes people are afraid of worshipping Krishna because they're afraid Krishna will take away everything from them. But here we're learning that don't worry, Krishna will give. He will give more than you want, better than you want. He will give himself ultimately. And satisfy your desires as well. So that Krishna's Jiva does very fully. Okay, we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments?
I just had one story with that Tulsi there. At a farm in Germany, they couldn't grow Tulsi. They couldn't even make, she would not even sprout. And this went for many years, and one day someone brought a garland of Shaligram Shilas for Lord Shumida. And that day, 200 Tulsi plants sprouted.
That's interesting.
Tulsi
comes. Nice story. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? What is the biggest Tulsi plant you've ever seen? Of course, in Nepal, they're as high as the sky. But what's the biggest one you've ever seen? Huh? As big as you. I've seen one bigger than you. In Fiji, I saw one that was probably 8 or 9 feet tall. Unless you've grown since the last time I saw you. So it was like a tree. Wonderful. Where did you see that big one? As big as you? In Mayapur. Tulsi is very nice association. Prabhupada in another place says it's very nice, especially to chant japa in front of Tulsi. Just to sit in front of Tulsi and chant japa. Tulasi Krishna Prayasi Namo Namah. It was very dear to Krishna, offering obeisances. Your Prayasi. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Narada Muni ki jai. Dhruva Maharaj ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.